Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Slow Burn Media, an evergreen podcast, presents Who Killed? A podcast that provides a voice for the voiceless.
The FBI spent 2 years trying to find the man behind the site.
I think it was unfair. I think it was not a level playing field.
Silk Road has since been shut down.
Could face life in prison.
Dread Pirate Roberts
grew to become the biggest illegal drug market on the internet.
A federal jury in New York found Ross Ulbricht guilty on all 7 counts.
Well, he created this online marketplace.
The site operated much like eBay. It allowed users to buy and sell illegal drugs, guns, and even hire hitmen.
That was kind of his fatal flaw. It was pretty ridiculous that you would put your real name out there if you're going to create this, become a criminal mastermind, but that's what he did.
Well, Ross Ulbricht, as we told you several moments ago, was told by a judge that he would have to forfeit $184 million.
It's difficult to say exactly what the precedent is, but I think what it does show is that the government has the ability to infiltrate and prosecute hackers.
Joining me this week is Justin from Generation Y, one of the most popular true crime podcasts in the industry. And I am very lucky to be joined this week by Justin. So thanks for joining me, Justin. How are you doing this week?
Hey, how you doing tonight?
I'm not doing too bad. I feel very happy to have you on the show and very lucky at the same time. You know, welcome to my passion case. This is where I ask, what is your passion case or what did you choose to discuss this week?
I always like cases that give some sort of commentary on society. We had spoken briefly once before, and you talked about you were into the old punk rock scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, something that was very popular in the old punk rock genre is the DIY, do it yourself.
The zine.
Yeah. You know, if you want it, then you make it happen. You know, you build it, they will come. And being in the Midwest, I mean, there was no scene here. You had to do it yourself. And I think this story is the ultimate in the do-it-yourself phenomena and the most punk rock thing somebody could probably do to society.
Yeah, I mean, if this could have been a chapter, if the Anarchist Cookbook was out nowadays, that would be a chapter on this case, I believe.
So we're talking about the Silk Road website on the dark web.
On the dark web. The Silk Road with Dread Pirate Roberts.
Mr. Ross Ulbricht.
Yeah, Ross. So what is it about the case that that fascinates you the most? Because I find this case to be extremely fascinating from, you know, just the whole origin of it.
Just the fact that he was able to do it, the fact that there was a dark web where he could pull it off, the fact that he made a ton of money off of this, and that law enforcement, you know, all of law enforcement's you know, men couldn't get him shut down for so long because of the aspects of it. And it's always human error that will bring you down, because security, you can have all the security in the world, but you let one person in through the front door and you're dead.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And just, it brings in the whole argument of the legalization of drugs, but then it goes further than that. And how do people feel about that?
There's a whole like myriad of things that this case kind of touches on. Not to sound crass, but I mean, this was an entrepreneur. I mean, in, you know, the book that I listened to over the weekend, you know, American Kingpin, they talk about how the valuation of the company would have been just astronomical if it was, if it was a legal means of doing things.
Yeah, if it was a business entity, I think it was up into the billions.
Oh, yeah, significantly into the billions. I think it was, they said it was going to be, he had done the math and he was, I think he was at the same value as Facebook or something crazy. And yeah. And so, yeah, you talk about somebody who he saw basically an opportunity and took his skills. He kind of Walter White'd it.
Yeah. So anyone that doesn't know, Ross started out as a mushroom grower, and then he was pretty much a self-taught programmer, which is insane because I can't do that. And I'm an IT guy. So he created this site, and at the very, very beginning, he actually went out onto like mushroom forums and promoted his site using a certain ID or online handle that could be traced back to him, because in the very beginning, he wasn't thinking ahead. And so he posts on this mushroom site using an email address that's probably rossulbrich@gmail.com. And he doesn't realize what he's done there. And then he starts this whole Silk Road site. And in the beginning, it's just some pot dealers, some ecstasy dealers doing their thing, you know, and getting their drugs out there. And it's essentially eBay, but for drugs, right?
Yeah. And so give me a little bit of background. I mean, I'm somewhat familiar about the dark web, but really when it boils down to it, I probably don't know jack compared to a lot of people. Could you give me a little bit? Do you know a little bit about the dark web?
I can give you it in a nutshell, and I'm sure anyone listening will probably be screaming through their, you know, headphones.
I'm sure I'll hear it.
The dark web was essentially set up by the American government. I think it was the Navy, and it was a way for the military personnel to continue communications with a mesh network that wasn't public in case the public internet ever went down or had problems, or to just hide or obfuscate their communications through the dark web. So it was created and made by our government for military purposes. And
so the government is sort of like the opiate crisis.
Oh yeah, yeah. They create their own problems, and then they say they're the solution.
Yeah, like the whole robocalling thing. Like for a moment there, like when they were like, "Oh yeah, we're gonna have this robocalling thing, and then you're gonna pay $2.99." I'm like, "Wait a second! You created a problem. Now we have to pay for it. How's that gonna make any sense?" I'm glad to see that they sort of got that straightened out. But not to go off on a tangent.
That's what the government's good at, is creating a problem and then giving you the solution. So. Yeah.
That's a whole nother podcast.
but it is valid for this discussion, because
it is, really, it is. Unfortunately, it is, because there were a lot of people that were affected by this.
Yeah. So Ross takes advantage of this private web that is encrypted and untraceable to create his website. And of course, he's self-taught when he's programming, so he's not that great at it. So he has huge holes in his website that any hacker can just walk right through. And then he starts getting bigger and bigger, right? I mean, it just takes off.
It's like Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. And I think that is like the truest expression that you could apply to this type of thing. And especially when you have drugs. I mean, drugs on the web. That I think is, you know, the whole dark web and the way that these drugs would have been purchased. I found, listening to the book, that became almost the most difficult aspect of the dark web, was acquiring bitcoins and how you actually would use those items to purchase these drugs.
I interviewed a guy on my peripheral who was just some random dude up in, you know, like Michigan or Montana or something. And he started buying and using from the Silk Road, and he wasn't a very techie guy, and he figured it out, but it took him weeks, if not months, to be like, okay, I need to go through this exchange and I need to go send money to this Australian website that would then give me the cryptocurrency that will then go in my wallet. But it can't be my official wallet. It's got to be a holding wallet so I can buy the drugs and there's no connection back to me. It was this whole process.
To be able to understand that, like, I have trouble even wrapping my brain around the, I mean, yes, that sounds awesome to be able to buy drugs online. I'm not going to take that as you will. I mean, I didn't mean that as an endorsement to do drugs. I'm just saying that for people who do drugs, that is a nice feature. But the acts, you know, the whole getting the bitcoins, understanding cryptocurrencies and all these different exchanges. I mean, man. And then to have this guy be a self-taught programmer, like you had said, you're an IT guy. That's insane.
Yeah.
And
I don't know how he did it, but obviously there was a lot of missteps along the way. I mean, you read the book, you hear about how many times his site was hijacked and people held it for ransom because he didn't know what he was doing. I mean, I remember a buddy of mine and I set up a shopping site for my wife's shop, you know, very basic thing. And we got the shopping cart already, and just applying that and setting it all up took months. I'm pretty sure Ross just did it all himself. And you have to realize that it's not just an eBay. You know, you think about eBay, oh, you get to sell stuff, but you have to set up an account. You have to set up the wallet or how to pay and how to accept. You have to set up a rating system. I mean, they had rating systems where you could review the buyers and sellers.
I mean, you kind of need that if you're going to be buying drugs from the dark web. I'm just going to say, you know, if there's any site that needs a rating system, that's probably the one.
Well, I mean, talk about free market. This is the only time we've actually seen a free market or black market, essentially, that is completely self-regulated. You know, you have a good product, more people will buy it, and you don't get to bully out the little guy. The little guy might have a good product too. So this was like a perfect example of a free market and how it would work.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like the third or fourth season of The Wire, you know, where they legalize drugs. And
that was my favorite season.
Oh, it's a fabulous season. I think that's the season with the kids, I think, but maybe, I don't know. Every season's great, but nonetheless.
So I got a question for you.
Yeah. Shoot.
I was when he's got drugs on the when he has drugs on the website, it's fine. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, they're selling, you know, pot and whatever. And then they start selling heroin. Are you okay with them selling heroin?
No, so that's this is where it becomes a slippery slope. And you know, not to be I don't know how this is going to be taken, but to think about it as the rating system that we just discussed that they had on their website, that would allow people to at least know that what they're getting is on the up and up. I mean, I'm kind of under the belief that if you legalize everything, I feel like drugs like heroin should be purchased, not purchased, but should be more medicinally given, where you go and they kind of have like a community injection. I mean, there's European cities that do this, but safe needles and that type of thing. I don't know.
Okay, so then when they started selling guns on the website, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, now we're whereas my personal thing about drugs, that's fine, And then you'd take it this next step. I mean, where I'm already hesitant with heroin, and now we're going into guns that you don't know what those guns are being purchased for, or who or whom is buying those guns. Because you could literally be supplying terrorists or domestic terrorists with the means to commit some kind of terroristic act. And that, oh gosh, you know, it's like free marketplace, free system. I mean, I get it. He didn't seem to, I mean, it sounded like in the book, he thought about it for a day and he was like, whatever, it's fine.
And then they started selling poisons on the site.
Yeah, that's when cyanide became available on the site. And then, unfortunately, I can't understand why you would have to have cyanide other than to poison somebody.
Yeah. So that's my opinion, is it's like, if you're selling something, you know, we all have the, I guess, authority or right to ingest into our own body whatever we want, but we do not have the right to do harm onto others. And when you're selling guns to people that obviously can't buy one legally or selling them cyanide or whatever, that's obviously, it's going to be used for something bad and used against somebody else. So I'm like, that's where my whole free market, whatever libertarian idealism goes. I'm not cool with that.
Yeah, that's kind of where it lost me too. I think once the poison stuff, I mean, I was obviously, if this was my situation, I would already be freaking out because of the heroin. And then guns, I mean, I guess once you've made the decision about heroin, I guess it gets easier each time. That's my thought on it. That's what my thought is, at least, about what his thinking was. Once he made one of those decisions, it made each decision that he made after that a little bit easier, even though it was completely stupid.
Yeah. I'm just glad that it never went like pedophile. They weren't ever selling child abuse pictures or anything like that. But still, it got really bad, really wrong, real quick.
And you could have seen how that would have happened too, if it would have continued. Not necessarily would have happened on that site, but how would they have been able to prevent it at that point?
Yeah. I mean, it was getting out of hand.
Yeah. I mean, they're selling guns, they're selling poison, they're selling heroin, cocaine.
And, you know, with any site, whether it be podcasting or YouTube or whatever, there's always a community. And the Silk Road had its own community. And hilariously enough, the drug dealers didn't like the weapons dealers. They didn't get along. And they actually thought about starting the armory, which was strictly weapons that was peeled off from the Silk Road to separate them.
It makes me think of the actual good movie. I'm not going to say it's a great movie, but the good movie, Lord of War, with Nick Cage.
Yeah.
The one and only Nick Cage.
Yes.
But if you haven't seen that movie, that's based off a true story, and it's actually pretty accurate to what did occur. And I mean, you're basically a gun runner at that point. If you have an armory, division of your website, you're a gun runner. You're gun running. Yeah. What else can you be?
Yeah, I think everyone should probably see Lord of War, and then what was the other one? War Dogs?
Oh, yeah. War Dogs was, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Those two are you have to watch both of them to understand what our government was doing. They created a problem, and then they gave us the solution, you know.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. So at this point in the game, Ross's, or at least the Silk Road website, is getting some attention from, I think it was Wired and Gawker and all these different magazines. And then the United States government, some senators came in and started having hearings about it. And this obviously puts a lot more eyes on it, gets law enforcement engaged. But at the same time, I can't help but think about like when Marilyn Manson or some controversial band would go on tour, and then all the Christian groups or, you know, family values groups would picket and boycott it. in protest. And I'm like, you're just making more people buy tickets. And when the American government had their hearings on it, his website went from, you know, millions a month to hundreds of millions a month.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically in our other conversation that we had, you know, off the record conversation about what was going on with the DEA in the 80s and, you know, telling everybody how to make crack cocaine and then creating these laws that are just so disproportionate to what they should be.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to create the, like, it's just so ass backwards. And I'm sure I'm going to hear about this, but it is just the way I feel. I mean, it's just what you created the problem. Now you want us to pay for the solution. And it's just such bullshit.
And there's good functions of government where I'm not trying to shit all over it.
But, no.
You know, I like schools and highways.
I definitely like schools and highways and, you know, law enforcement that do their job the right way. And, you know, there are great aspects of government. Now, the crazy thing.
I was going to say, speaking of government and law enforcement doing it the right way, there's a whole problem with the way they go about this in this book.
Yeah, let's, I mean, we can talk about that right now, just because, you know, it doesn't really spoil anything. But the detectives that were investigating this case, they weren't on the up and up, were they?
Not all of them, no. There was at least two or three of them that were... Yeah, they were just as dastardly as anyone else on that website. They stole Bitcoin, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars worth. And when a certain member of the group, was it Variety Jones, VJ, or was it somebody else? I don't remember. One of his operatives or moderators gets busted. Mm. And essentially, I think it was Green, like a... chronic pain or something.
It was the one in Utah, wasn't it? The
yeah.
Guy, yeah.
Old guy. And I guess Ross decides, hey, you know, I don't want this guy talking, so we need to shut him up. And of course, how do you shut somebody up? Well, you have a website where you can pretty much buy and sell anything. So the services turn into a hitman service. But Ross doesn't realize he's talking to federal agents who are the hitmen. And it appears that they actually go to this man's house and rough him up and do a fake hit on him. But they steal from him and they beat the shit out of him to make this false hit.
Well, that doesn't sound like that's very government friendly or... politically correct.
No. And along with all of them stealing money, I mean, and I get the temptation there.
Sure. It's they think it's digital. It's nothing. It's but what's the difference between them stuffing $20,000 that they find at a drug house into their pants than, you know,
they're underpaid. They're probably, you know, got a bad rating on their last yearly review. Their boss hates them. And then you throw $1 million in front of their face that is totally untraceable. What did you expect to happen?
Now, if I was a Ross Ulbricht in this position, I would have been like, oh, payoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. Just bribing people left and right.
That's basically what he ended up doing. I mean, you mentioned it before about him not knowing what he was doing about programming and his site being taken over. I mean, he had to pay ransoms to a number of different hackers, right? Isn't that?
Yeah. Every time.
Every time? How many times were there?
There were multiple times. There was at least two or three times that his site got taken over, or at least portions of it were taken over, and they would freeze transactions, whatever, wherever the exploit was that they found out, they would take over that and he had to pay them out. First time it was like $50,000. Second time it was more, and it's just like, oh my gosh, dude.
Now is this the part when they was when he was in Vietnam and he was going just sitting in like the web cafe and just watching his money just disappear? He's like, oh shit, like I mean, I can't even imagine. I just can't imagine. And the one thing about that book, which, you know, I'll put the author's name in the notes and stuff, and link to the website, because it's a great book if anybody hasn't read it. It really does detail and show you kind of the side of, I don't know. What did you think about it? I thought it was fairly
balanced.
Impartial. Impartial.
No, because you have good cops in there. You have investigators. It really makes them shine. The guys that are on the hunt. And then you have Ross, who it really gets into his head and his motivations. But it shows the bad on both sides, and at least, you know, however you want to interpret it, the good at least on the law enforcement side. I don't know if you think there's any good on Ross's side or not, but some people do.
Yeah, I mean, if you believe in free market and free marketplaces, then you're definitely going to be in his corner. Obviously, you're going to have to make some sacrifices as far as what you may or may not think is on the up and up. But I think the whole building of the website, the creation of the rating system, the creation of he recruited drug dealers basically in like a matter of a weekend. You know, he had stuff on the website. People were selling from all over the world. And this wasn't just like something that you were getting from, you weren't emailing your buddy and saying, hey, grab me a sack of weed. You were basically
talking to some guy in Amsterdam or or whatever,
and getting ecstasy, anything from ecstasy to heroin to guns. And now, did they offer hitman services, or did he actually put it out there that he did, didn't he? He put it out there that he was looking to get.
He put it out there, and they didn't offer hitman services to my knowledge. Right. But again, it was just a matter of time. It's just, you know.
This is one of those stories. It starts off where you want to be a supporter.
Yeah.
And you look at injustices and you see the sentence, which we'll get to later, and you go, this just seems so backwards. But the deeper you dig into the actual things that you could do with the website, it really does bring it into perspective as far as how bad this could have gotten.
Yeah. And that's why I love this story, is because how far, I mean, there's all the black and white people of this world, and I'm not talking about race. I'm talking about people that are like, this is good, this is bad, you're good, you're bad, this is the law, this isn't the law, all that stuff. Their moral compass is set. But for the rest of us, how far do you go? How far do you allow this acceptance of this website? When do you draw the line that it's gone too far? And I think it's great that it forces people to question their own moral compass.
It really does. I mean, I definitely look at it, you brought up that question, and you do have to take stock of what you believe in. And I think you have to make decisions. Are you going to be just this little niche site that makes a few million dollars for you a year, which is hell of a living? But yeah. I mean, he was making, like we talked about, the site was, he was making what they said in the book, $500,000 a day,
something like that. And then it was in Bitcoin, and the price of Bitcoin was going up. So you're compounding his interest and his profits every day, to the point where I don't remember if they ever put him on Forbes top 400 or anything, but
El Chapo on there. I don't understand why they wouldn't put him.
Yeah. At one point, I wonder what he was worth at his peak.
Yeah, and he was such a, he was like the Steve Jobs of the dark web, because he was such like a non-conformist, you know. He didn't have, I could just picture him. Did they even say he had furniture? I don't know. I think that's a Jobs thing, but like.
No, he was such a minimalist. Like, he would just wander around with, you know, crappy luggage or plastic bags and stuff, and all he had was his laptop.
And he's worth like $1 billion.
And it just shows how humble and how non-materialistic he was in that sense. But you can be humble in one sense and an extreme, crazy, you know, I guess extremist in another sense, you know, and I don't even know. It's no, there's no black and white here. There's no, he's purely an evil person who drove this terrible site to destroy people's lives. He was a normal guy. Just like me and you.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, okay. So basically the way that the story stands, you know, at chronologically, if we're going to go chronologically, he's in a position where he's now offering, or he's looking for somebody to put out a hit. He gets this government informant somehow, of course, this is how it always ends up. You know, the person you're talking to do your hit for you as a government informant. I don't know how that always works, but good for the people that turn them in. But nonetheless, I think this was the guy who had cracked the system, and he was actually talking with, was this the same guy that was talking with him, or was this actually just like a random person that he had recruited?
I think it was actually, you know, because at this point, so many people from the site had been busted that their accounts were being managed by law enforcement at this point.
Okay.
So I think it was one of his confidants that their account was literally a law enforcement officer. And so when he reached out, it was literally law enforcement that replied. That's my understanding of it.
Yeah. It's now, when was it that the law enforcement actually got the ability? Was it when they busted the guy in Utah that they were able to get the server information? And
yeah, the guy in Utah was an admin, but they had busted multiple people, just regular users, through just, you know, drug busts,
right?
And then if law enforcement was able to connect the dots and be like, oh, this guy was selling on Silk Road, that's why he was shipping so many things, then they would use their warrants to confiscate their computers, or they would just use their leverage of, we will bust you to the umpteenth degree unless you give us your log on to the Silk Road. So there were hundreds of people that were busted just by local law enforcement. So they had eyes on the forms. They had eyes on all this stuff. But it wasn't until that one guy got busted, the Utah guy, that they got access to direct messages, because he had an admin account. So when, you know, you're on eBay and, you know, some seller pisses you off and you write to eBay on that private message thing saying, hey, this guy didn't do what he was, you know, said he was going to do, or I have a problem. Well, that guy had one of those customer service admin accounts. So they got access to all of those direct messages.
Okay. Hey, that's better customer service than any cable company out there. So hey, at least there's at least they're, you know, supplying that for the user.
And they got a direct line to the Dread Pirate Roberts.
So. The Dread Pirate Roberts. And where does Dread Pirate Roberts hail from, the name?
Oh, that was the Princess Bride, and I forgot the actor's name, but it was the, my name is Antoyo, you killed my father, prepare to die guy.
He's the guy from Homeland.
Yeah, yeah. Like now he's like this cool, suave old dude. So, back in Princess Bride, the Dread Pirate was this ragtag group, but it's a name that anyone can hold. So if you are the Dread Pirate Roberts, you reign for how long? So it's an idea, not a person. And that's a little reference to Batman there. You know, you can't fight an idea.
Right. There's always going to be somebody that's going to take its place, or take the place of the idea. And now Ross had wanted, or they created the whole idea of Dread Pirate Roberts with the idea of eventually not being involved, right? I mean, he didn't intend to do this forever, but he did intend to pass it along, I'm assuming.
And just imagine if he would have passed it along just a week before, you know, a month before he got busted.
And he was talking, the day that he got busted, he's talking to, like we had just mentioned, you know, he's talking to government people, and he thinks all of a sudden, you know, he's talking to somebody that he's obviously established trust with, but is actually somebody from the government. And they had been able to trace him to the library, I think it was in San Francisco, the San Francisco Public Library. And I think that's where they had the sting operation basically set up. And
that was such a cool idea. I have to give props to the government on that one.
I don't know if it was overly dramatized or what, but the idea that they would be talking to him. Now, the reason being that he had created it, and did they know this? Is this why they did it? Because he had created an encryption tool that if he shut the laptop, there was no way that you could have gotten access.
That was very common back then. In fact, I worked for Sprint or Embark, whatever the company was called at the time, where all the laptops were encrypted. And we had to have the master encryption key. If I ever needed to save your data and back it up, I had to have that encryption key. Without it, I can't get access to any of your stuff. So,
okay, yeah, keep going.
So essentially with Ross, as soon as he, you know, they messaged him and said, hey, we need your help. And then as soon as he started communicating with them, they were like, we know where he is. We know he's at the library and we know he's online because he's chatting with us. So his laptop's open. And that was their whole idea. And then how do you get this guy without him closing his laptop? So they had two agents literally start a commotion in front of him, like a fight. And as soon as he looked up, because he was distracted, another agent was standing behind him and grabbed his laptop, took it away from him.
Yeah, you know, Ross had been so, he was one of those people that was very cognizant of his surroundings. And I believe, at least the way the book tells the story, is that the agent, I think it was a woman who sat at the table that he was at. And he thought, like, he did his assessment and thought, she was not a security risk, yet she was the one that, when he turned around, she, you know, snatched the laptop and things weren't going his direction anymore. But yeah, that is definitely, I think, one of the more impressive setups by the government, especially in this digital age.
Yeah. And before even that, I mean, there were so many times he almost got caught. I remember he had his girlfriend, Julia, who told her friend about the website. And then her friend got into a fight with them and they kicked her out. And then she posted to Facebook or social media. I wonder if law enforcement would be interested in Ross's drug website. You know, it's like, what?
Yeah. And then he calls her up crying, please take it down, take it down. To think that nobody saw that, or... I mean, he could have easily been taken, you know, busted at that point. But I remember reading about it in real time, you know, with Gawker. And like you said, I mean, it was just such a mysterious thing that was out there, that it was only time. Time was basically not on Ross's side, in my opinion. I think the walls.
Inevitable.
Yeah. You've basically created something that when the media, even if it's not mainstream media, is talking about. And eventually, as we know how this goes, you know, stories that start on niche sites that actually end up being stories, well, they get picked up. And
yeah,
it's a little hard to avoid.
Yeah, I mean, when the government's having hearings about it, when all these things are being publicized, and then you have the, was it New Zealand or Australia, where the kid took a drug and jumped out the window of the hotel?
Oh, gosh. I forget where it was, but what was it? Like, they took six tabs of acid. Each kid took one, and one kid freaked out and jumped off a roof. And all that makes me think of is, now it's terrible because it's true, but it does make me think of Reefer Madness when, you know, the guy hits the joint and proceeds to kill the people in the apartment and jump out the window.
And so this is like one of the main things they're charging, you know, they're going to use against Ross, is the death of this kid. But somebody else bought the drugs from the site. that drug somehow got into the hands of these kids at this party at this hotel. And then this one kid takes it and freaks out and jumps out the window to his own death. It's a horrible situation. And I can't imagine how bad it is for the parents, but it's like, how culpable is Ross in this?
Well, that brings up a very interesting question, because when people die from drinking too much at a fraternity house, like what's been going on lately, or goes on every year, but if somebody, you know, the liquor company or the beer company or whom, whatever they were drinking, they're not held liable.
Or even guns, you know, I mean, Ross created a website. So imagine the founder of eBay is now going to be held responsible because some seller on his website sold something to somebody who then gave it to somebody else who then died from it.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, when you put it in eBay terms, it's like, holy shit. Like that doesn't, you know, it's like, okay, he created the site, but it's all these other people that used the site. And I guess without Ross, the site wouldn't exist, but.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like cut off the head of the snake and it will go away. But I mean, I don't believe that. I mean, I'm pretty confident there's like Silk Road 2.0 and I mean, there's probably many places that you can still do this.
Yeah.
But that brings us to he gets arrested and they bring him in and they have this big trial. They put him in, I think they took him to the Manhattan Correctional Center, which is like the same exact place that El Chapo was located, and Jeffrey Epstein as well.
Yeah, they're treating him like a drug czar.
Yeah, like he's the, like, exactly. They're treating him like he's the head of the cartel. How do you feel about that?
I, you know, it's always one of those situations where we have law enforcement's response, which up until this point, I'm okay with most of the investigation. I'm okay with the way they arrested him. I'm not okay with the guys that were skimming off the top or doing the fake assassination. But at this point, it's like, you know, you see some guy, you see some white guy who might have killed his wife, and you have two investigators walk up to his front door and knock. But then you have some guy who's selling loose cigarettes out there and he's trampled by three officers and strangled. You know, the response is never consistent. It's never what you'd expect. And with Ross, he's a programmer. At the end of the day, that's kind of what he was. And sure, he might have hired some hitmen to kill somebody. I've done so many stories on the Generation Y where husbands or wives have hired hitmen to kill their spouses. They're arrested. You know, maybe there's a gun drawn, maybe there isn't. I mean, this seems a little over the top, but then again, the cops don't know what they're dealing with. This guy has millions, if not billions of dollars. He could have a small army following him around. We don't know, but apparently he doesn't. So I think it's a little bit of an overreaction, and definitely what they end up charging him with, I'm thinking, geez, you just wanted to make an example out of him.
Yeah, I definitely think that it's one of those, we're going to make an example out of you, and the punishment is going to be so severe that it's not going to fit the crime. Because what ends up happening is, in my opinion, not the way. How old is Ross at this time?
He was 29 or something.
And we're not talking about some big, I mean, we're not talking about some terrorist. We're not talking about some muscle-bound hitman. We're talking about a 29-year-old, average-looking white dude. I mean, I think that when they found out who he was, I have to think that they were shocked at who this person was.
Yeah, they don't talk about any profiling him or anything. You know, they're just going after the Dread Pirate Roberts. And with the namesake, with the website and all the nefarious things going on, you probably imagine a walking nightmare. And then you get Ross. It's just like, oh, he's just a person. He's just a man, just like anyone else, whatever. And so they charge him with this like cartel crimes and like cartel trafficking and stuff. And then they use the hitman job and they use the kid that jumped out the window. They use all these other things as like examples. But if you actually charged him with the hitman job, if you actually charged him with, say, conspiracy to sell drugs that led to a death, he could have fought those charges legally. He couldn't fight these cartel drug trafficking charges at all. He had no defense for that.
Yeah. I mean, so what do you think about the sentence?
It was like 2 life sentences plus 40 years or something.
Without the possibility of parole.
Yeah. Without the possibility of parole and without the possibility of any sort of defense. Like, his legal team had zero defense because everything they tried to bring up was shot down by the judges and prosecutors. I don't even know if he got any kind of appeals since then.
Yeah, I mean, there's a freeross.org, you know, website. And, you know, obviously there's plenty of people that support him, but...
I mean, I guess that's where I don't know how I, you know, depending on the day, I'm like, nah, dude, that guy should probably get like 10 or 15 years and that's it.
In my opinion, I totally agree with you. I say this though, you know, having done some research on the case and, you know, looking at what's going on as far as currently, he actually made a motion in October of this year to vacate, set aside or correct the sentence. So whether or not there's any chance that actually happens, he obviously he had enough grounds to bring it to court. So there is a movement to at least try to lessen the sentence, because I don't see how yes, okay, like you had mentioned before, people hire hitmen, women. We have seen cases on Dateline, 48 Hours, you name the show, of people hiring hitmen, doing the fake hit, and getting 15 years.
Yeah, and that's how I came up with that number, is that's the average of the, you hire a hitman to kill somebody, you're going to probably do about 15 years.
And the one crazy thing about the sentence, well, there's a number of crazy things about the sentence, but the thing that stands out is they're all non-violent offenses, and they didn't even charge him with any type of hit or, because there was, there was nothing they could link, they couldn't link him to any actual murder. So I just find it completely such an overreach as far as making an example of somebody. But
yeah, I mean, with that kid that jumped out the window, who was the other guy that gave him the hit of acid or whatever it was? Why isn't he held responsible? He's the one that had possession of the drug that gave it to his friend. Normally, that's who we'd hold responsible, or we would hold the dealer responsible if even, which they rarely do that. We just charge dealers with dealing drugs. We rarely charge them with the death of one of their users. I mean, that doesn't happen. And so to charge Ross with all this stuff and try to link this heartfelt story of this tragedy of this boy dying into it, it's like, come on.
Yes, Justin, I do believe that is ridiculous. And it is also ridiculous that he is serving a life sentence without the chance of parole. So anybody who wants to sign the petition on change.org for Free Ross Ulbricht, or go, I think there is a website, freerossulbricht.com, definitely check it out because he should be pardoned at some point for this crime because it's definitely not worthy of spending the rest of his life in jail. He is a young man, and yeah, he made some mistakes, but the bottom line is, you know, the punishment doesn't fit the crime, and it's kind of cruel and unusual, to be 100% honest with you. So, with that being said, again, thank you so much for listening, and check out Generation Y. I'm sure you've seen them in the top 20 of all the charts across the board. And again, I do drop new episodes every Friday. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can do so at BillHuffman3. And as always, until next week, stay healthy and be safe.
Hi, I'm Sean McCabe.
And I'm Carrie McCabe.
We are, well, married, obviously, but we're also obsessed with the darker side of things.
True crime stories, alien abductions, poltergeists. If it leaves you scratching your head and keeping those lights on at night, we want to hear about it.
That's why we host the podcast, Ain't It Scary, with Sean and Carrie.
Every week, we bring our listeners a true story guaranteed to send chills down your spine, from history's most brutal serial killers to the mystery of spontaneous human combustion.
Yep, lots of these stories leave unanswered questions behind, and you'll get to poke through the rubble of the evidence with a hardened skeptic and
someone whose mind is more open to fun.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
You can find Ain't It Scary with Sean and Carrie wherever you get your podcasts, and on social media at Ain't It Scary. Come play with us.
On the morning of August 1st, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes, I've traced heroic acts of bravery, and I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.